Welcome back to Science Odyssey. I'm your host and producer, Clay Knaff. On today's program, we're contemplating the possibility of faster-than-light neutrinos. Those tiny, ghostly particles have been showing up early at a detector in Gran Sasso, Italy, after being produced at a particle collider at CERN in Central Europe. Most physicists think there must be a mistake somewhere. That includes our next guest, but physicist Alan Kostolecki admits that the data just might be reflecting a real phenomenon, faster-than-light neutrinos. He should know. A quarter century ago, he and several colleagues published a paper proposing that very possibility. I asked him about it earlier this week. Most physicists are reacting to the announcement by the OPERA group with disbelief. You're an exception to that. I gather long before this announcement, you and some colleagues investigated the possibility that neutrinos might actually travel faster than light. Tell us about that, please.
Yes, it was in 1985. Three of us, Trotos, Abby Hauser, and myself, wrote a paper with the title The Neutrino as a Tachyon, in which we speculated that perhaps one or more of the known neutrinos might in fact travel faster than light. And at the time, it really was just a speculation. It was prompted, I think, more by curiosity and by our general, the general physicist's willingness to consider oddball ideas as long as you can try and make them consistent, as long as you make them consistent mathematically and have things hang together.
Well, let me interrupt you for just a moment, because anybody who's watched Star Trek or any of a number of science fiction productions has heard of a tachyon, but the general understanding that we had was that if a tachyon exists, one of its curious features is that it should never travel slower than the speed of light.
The idea that we originally proposed was in the context of special relativity. So there are really, special relativity allows three classes of particles in principle. One class is particles that move slower than light. One class is particles that move at light speed, and there is, hypothetically, a third class of particles that could move faster than light. No such particles of the third type have ever been detected, as far as we know, and there are particular theoretical difficulties with having particles like that, because it turns out that if you do have such a particle, then two events that would normally be separated in the order A occurs before B, no longer have definite time ordering. According to one observer, event A might occur before event B, but according to a second observer, event B would occur before event A, and then you have trouble. You have theoretical trouble in being able to describe things as cause and effect.
Mm.
So for this reason, I would say most theorists, and myself included, I believe that simply having a particle that moves faster than light in conventional special relativity is something that is unlikely to be realized in nature.
Hmm. Well, let me back up for just a moment, because the revolution that Einstein started began with the idea that time and space are relative and that events that look one way from one perspective can look radically different from another. Something we learned early on was that simultaneity in one frame of reference may not be in another. How is this different from what Einstein began teaching us in 1905?
It's not qualitatively different. The difference is that with particles moving faster than light, the possibility exists to send signals and influence things that have occurred in the past of a particular observer. If you are moving slower than light and you have relativistic effects, it is true that simultaneity is no longer something that is the same for all observers, but it is not possible to influence effects that occurred before your own personal time. If you have faster than light travel in Einstein's relativity, you are not protected from those effects, and so there is a problem.
Mm. It would be a big problem for state lotteries, I suppose, if somebody could signal back in time what the winning number might be.
Yes, there would be a lot of things that would be a problem.
Well, your paper was one that caught the attention of many. At this point, having heard about the experiment in Italy, what's your view? Do you think that you actually predicted something that's now been detected, or
Do you feel this is more likely an aberration in the data?
Well, let me say first that I am confident that the OPERA collaboration, who obtained this measurement, have put tremendous effort and care into making this measurement. They spent 2 years or more in determining precisely the distance between the source of the neutrinos at CERN and the detector at Gran Sasso, a distance which is some 730 kilometers, and they pinned it down to 20 centimeters, which is a phenomenal accuracy for a distance measurement.
Yeah, that's like a hand's breadth, right?
Yeah, extraordinary. And at the same time, they also were able to pin down the time of flight of the neutrinos from CERN to Gran Sasso to about 10 billionths of a second, which is also quite remarkable. And when you take those two things into account, they discovered evidence that the signal was going faster than light and a sufficiently strong evidence that under normal circumstances, this would be taken to be a definite signal of a discovery. However, because the claim is so extraordinary, and as we all know, extraordinary claims require extraordinary proof, I think it is fair to say that most physicists, myself included, will remain skeptical until the experiment and the result has been confirmed by one or more other independent experiments. So I believe that at present, one should not take this as compelling evidence that faster-than-light particle has been discovered. Nonetheless, it's of course very intriguing, and from my own personal perspective, since I've spent a significant fraction of my life working on these ideas, it's very interesting.
Oh, I'm sure. Physical theory is something that only changes in the face of really extraordinary new discoveries, isn't it?
Yes, I think the amount of change occurs, the amount of change determines how much evidence is required. Scientific theories change every day. Every day people make new discoveries that require small changes in known theory, small changes of perspective, and so on. But every so often, very large changes take place. With, for example, the discovery of quantum mechanics about 100 years ago now, there was a major change in perspective. In fact,
right.
Relativity itself was also a major change in perspective. Newton's laws had held for hundreds of years before that, and they still hold in their own regime of validity, but people had made sufficient theoretical and experimental progress that it became apparent that Newton's theory was not able to handle all possible regimes, and so relativity was born. Mm. And it's conceivable, although, as I say, one should not yet claim that this is compelling evidence, but it is conceivable that we are on the threshold of a similar change where Einstein's theory of relativity, which is known to be correct and which will continue to hold in its regime of validity, might perhaps not hold under all circumstances.
And I'd like to ask you to come out on a limb a little way with me. If this finding is replicated and validated, what sort of modification do you suppose that would require to Einstein's theory?
Well, if indeed this is confirmed by other independent experiments, then it will probably be necessary to make some sort of modification to the way we currently view the fundamental physics. At the moment, fundamental physics is well described by two theories that don't mesh terribly well. One of them is called the Standard Model, and it's a theory that is based mostly on Einstein's special relativity and also substantially on particle physics. It's a theory that describes all the known particles and forces in nature except for gravity. And this theory works extremely well, phenomenally well, at describing the known particles, known forces, and in describing effects that include quantum mechanics. There is a second theory, which is actually Einstein's other theory of relativity, his general theory of relativity, or theory of general relativity, that is a theory of gravity. And that theory also works phenomenally well at describing what we see in nature, what we observe in nature, and reproducing the results of experiments on gravity. But unfortunately, the two theories don't quite mesh. And so if you want to create a theory that contains both quantum physics and gravity at the same time, there appears to be a difficulty. The theories that people have tried to write down so far have had some kind of theoretical problem associated with them. There are quite a few suggestions for theories that might get around this problem, but no theory yet is really compelling at unifying both quantum physics and gravity.
Right.
It's certainly possible that in attempting to unify quantum physics and gravity, you might have to make some small change to the way relativity works. The standard model is built on special relativity and quantum physics. Gravity is built on general relativity. It is possible that small changes in the way relativity works, either the special theory or the general theory, or perhaps even both, would be necessary in order to be able to unify the two.
Well, it's a very exciting moment in high-energy physics, and we thank you for taking some time to clarify some of the issues behind it with us.
You're very welcome. Thank you very much, Clay.
That was Dr. Alan Kostolecki, Distinguished Professor of Theoretical Physics at Indiana University. To some people, the Opera Group announcement may trigger a groan. There goes science changing its mind again. But to an armchair observer of science like myself, this whole situation is beautiful. It shows once again that all truths in science are tentative, that theory unites disparate observations into a coherent whole, but that evidence rules, and that the pursuit of evidence is a shared undertaking, shared in this case across the entire physics community. As our guests noted, extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence, and no one is taking the faster-than-light neutrinos as fact. Not yet, anyway. But ultimately, that question will be decided by the evidence. In the meantime, humor rules. I leave you with a joke that popped up in the physics community this week. The bartender leans forward and says, "We don't serve your kind in here." A neutrino walks into a bar. That's our program for today. Thank you for listening. If you'd like to respond, you can reach me via my website, claynaff.com. I am Clay Naff, and I'll be back again with you next week. Until then, fellow explorers, sail on.